Good afternoon and aloha to those people that are dressed much more appropriately than I am. It's happy 4th of July to all of you. Today is called the birthday of America. Historians teach us that July 4th, 1776, the 13 colonies became a country or a nation. What historians usually don't teach is the reason why. The reason why is because God wanted it. Purely, simply, God wanted it. God wanted this country to be an example to other nations. God wanted this country to show that God blesses those who willingly choose to live His way, to follow His laws. Please turn to Deuteronomy 9. Deuteronomy 9. And I want to begin reading verse 1, which is a good place to start. Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today and go into dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fortified up to heaven, a people great and tall, the descendants of the Anakim. Who are they? Whom you know and whom you've heard about and whom it is said, who can stand before the descendants of Anak? Must have been a pretty tough group of people. Verse 3, therefore understand today that the Lord, or the Eternal your God, is He who goes before you as a consuming fire. You know, if you were following after and something was going before you as a consuming fire, you wouldn't have to worry too much about what was taken out of your way. The consuming fire would take it out of the way, I think. He will destroy them and bring them down before you, so you shall drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Eternal has said to you. Now we come to a little change of pace. Do not think in your heart, after the Eternal, your God, has cast them out before you, saying, because of my righteousness. God's telling them, don't think it's because of your righteousness that the Eternal has brought me in to possess this land, but it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Eternal is driving them out from before you. It is not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you go in to possess their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations that the Eternal your God drives them out from before you, and that He may fulfill the word which the Eternal swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The Eternal, both Father and Son, was in the process of fulfilling a covenant promise on July 4th, 1776. Let's read about that in Genesis 12. Genesis 12, starting at verse 1. Now the Eternal had said to Abram, his name had not been changed yet, get out of your country. Get away from your family. Leave your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And then listen to this last one. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. We heard that in one of the songs that we sang, the third song that we sang today. All the nations of the earth are to be blessed in the nation that God made from the descendants of Abraham. Now, Abram or Abraham, he didn't become a great nation in his day or time. It just didn't happen. But God had promised, so God would fulfill that promise. We sometimes lose faith, human faith, not godly faith, but we sometimes lose human faith because of setbacks or sickness, death at times. We sometimes lose human faith because we see in our own lives and the lives of others, we see real, actual, true, negative happenings. Sometimes we forget that God, both Father and Son, God is working out a pre-designed plan. And that plan, God's plan, it's going to work. So right now I'm going to give a three-point message. Love those 3 points. Three-point message, a message derived from a book published in 2002. What's so great about America? Please raise your hand if you've ever read that book or even heard of it. Mr. Braden, thank you very much. I thought the entire audience was ignorant of Dinesh D'Souza's book, but thank you very much for having heard of it. And Chris raised his hand too. Thank you. It was published, what year did I say? 2002. That was a year after 9/11, right? And Dinesh D'Souza was, or is, an Indian, an East Indian, not a Hoopgayai Indian, but an East Indian from India. And he came to America, and I'll get to that in a few minutes. But he made 3 points in his book, and I want to use them to make my point today. Maybe I should tell you, though, at the beginning, he didn't have to come to America. He was a Brahmin. You know what a Brahmin is? Brahmins, the highest caste in India, and Brahmins become doctors, lawyers, they become politicians, they can become anything they want because they're the highest caste in India. I know we're not supposed to have caste anymore, even in India, but they do. Why did he come to America? Because he wanted to be a writer. What's a writer? His father said, "You're an idiot." You mean writer? Writer is nothing. His parents are still there in India, he came to America and he became a writer and he wrote a bestseller called What's So Great About America? But it's not a question. It's not a question. It's a statement. His book is written to us to tell us what is so great about America. There was no question in his mind. It was to deliver a message to perhaps those of us who were born here who don't have the appreciation anymore for what we have. He wrote it in 2002. Now, the three areas that he stresses in his book are the 3 points of this message, but I highly recommend that you read the entire book, you know, because you're only going to get a thumbnail sketch from me. But it's a really good book, and it brought back to my mind some of the things that I need to appreciate about this country. Number one, first, D'Souza says, we excel in science. Now, you might want to argue with that, but it wouldn't be good. And to prove the point, we need only to look at the universities of the United States. The universities of the United States where David went. Andrew's brother went, you know, UCSD. Do you realize that the universities of the United States, the high-class, expensive universities, are 40% people from other countries? Why did they come here? Well, they come here for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons One of the reasons is because, as I said, rich people in other countries can send their kids here because it costs a lot of money to go to a high-level university in the U.S. Now, if you get SAT scores of 1,600 or above, 1,600 is the top, but if you get it up there near the top, then you can get in there, you know, and we can go there too. But the rich people of the world will send their children there because they have the money to pay for it up front. And there's another reason that they send them there, and this is not Dinesh's idea, but it was my own. They send their kids here so that they can learn how we do things in the United States so that they can do them better and eventually take over what we do and become rich and famous much more so than us. Dinesh didn't say that. I said that. Instead, Dinesh gives a short list of Western civilization scientists that powerfully influenced the whole world. Copernicus, Kepler, Boyle, Newton, all of these British scientists. I know you're saying, well, that's not America, that's Britain. But where did we come from? Where did we come from? America came from Britain. I think that's why we fought the Revolutionary War. Wasn't that it? You remember that, don't you? Well, I don't mean you were there, but I mean you remember. And I would like to quote something that Dinesh quoted or said that they said. All four of those, Copernicus, Kepler, Boyle, and Newton, all believed that their work demonstrated the hidden hand of God in the universe. Their science was inspired and fortified by their Christian faith. How often do you hear that anymore? I mean, most of the scientists that I think of today, you know, are very much into evolution. Isn't that how you say it? Evolution? Yeah, most of them are. But it's not true. The science that we actually practice was born and raised by people who believed God's word. We sometimes forget that. But if not most of the West's greatest scientists, many of them were Christians. So Dinesh takes us back to our early biblical beliefs as he examines science, true science. Dinesh also states, reality is rational. Did you ever think about that? Reality makes sense. Without this assumption, and then he uses a funny word, without this faith in rational thinking, science itself becomes impossible. You can't say, I'm going to jump up in the air and float. You know, you have to say, I'm going to jump up in the air and then fall down. It's got to be rational, or it doesn't make sense and it won't work. Dinesh is saying what God's word states, that there is a God, both Father and Son, and God is discoverable in their creation. Let's go to Romans 1, where it states that very well. I remember in our early days in the church, Romans 1 must have been read every Sabbath because it makes so much good sense. Romans 1, verse 20. For since the creation of the world, His, God's invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they, people, are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Now, Dinesh is simply calling to mind and stating what he, an immigrant from India, clearly sees by contrast. What do I mean by contrast? Well, they don't have the stuff in India that we have here. Yeah, maybe the rich, the very rich, have all of our stuff. But I was telling James and Abriella today that one of Dinesh's friends that had come over here from India said, I want to go to a country where even the poor people are fat. You know? And I thought about that, and on PBS, I don't know if you noticed the other night, but the guy that's the current leader of India, Modi, you know, he was over a chunk of land in India before he became whatever they call the guy that's over all of India today. And they pointed out that in that section of India, they still have starving children. And one of the reasons why he was elected, remember, India's democratic now, one of the reasons why he was elected is he was going to change that. He was going to bring all those poor little kids that are starving to death, which they showed on PBS, you know. He was going to change that. It isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen until Christ returns, but let's go on. The second aspect that Dinesh says makes America great follows from what I just said. If he had stayed in India, he probably would have been a successful doctor, lawyer. He may have even become a politician, you know, and gone on to, you know, become what Modi is now. Because he was a Brahmin. And I know that... I remember when I was in school and they changed that and they said the caste system's not going to work anymore in India. Well, it still is there and it still does work. It doesn't work well, but it works well for the ones that are the higher ups. But he wanted to be a writer, and so he came to the United States. A lot of people want to come here because they want to do something that they can't do in their own home country. They believe, and it used to be true, even if it's not true anymore, that you can come here and you can be anything that you want. I think we're losing that, but I think that there's a lot of truth to it. His parents had the money to send him and the education to understand and to get him a visa. You know, we have people in Africa. Suzanne and I were able to visit there a couple of years ago. You can't get a visa to come to the United States. You know, a visa is just a permit to go visit another country. Why can't you? Why can't you get a visa? I mean, the reason is when people come to the United States, they don't go home. And they want the educated people to be there, to stay there, to make their country great. Anyway, the word that D'Souza uses for his point number two is democracy. I don't like that word. I personally don't like that word. That word is taken directly from the Greek. It means what? Rule by the people. Is that what we have now? Well, I don't know. I don't want to argue that point. We have sullied and we have spoiled and soiled that word badly, but the concept still draws millions of people to this country. And they come by hook or by crook. People are literally willing to die to get here to have something that we take pretty much for granted. D'Souza saw it in a way that I will never be able to see it. I was born and raised here. True, he was wealthy. His family was doing okay in India, but he wanted to be a writer. Why in the world he wanted to be a writer, I don't know, but he did. And he came to America and he became a writer and he wrote a bestseller. But he knew that if he stayed in India because of the cultural barriers and the way that writers were looked at there, it would have been very tough for him to think outside that cultural box that he was in. We in God's church are challenged in much the same way that Dinesh D'Souza was challenged in India. Now, why do I say that? I don't have any challenges. Things just work my way, you know. I just get anything I want. I tell Suzanne, she gets it for me. Why are you laughing? Oh, you know Suzanne. Well, sometimes I ask nicely and she does it. But anyway, I want to make the point that I would not call it democracy that people come to the United States to get. You know what they come here to get? They come here to get our stuff. They see it. You know, when we were in Africa, those people riding around on their little motor scooters, they had smartphones. Well, why did they have them? They had them so people could call them up and they would be able to go pick them up and they could undercut, the city little minivan that took them around. They could undercut them. They could make money. But while they're not driving their motor scooters around or their motorcycles around, they could look on their smartphone and see all the stuff in the world because it comes down via satellite. And they're not satisfied anymore. They want to come here and get your stuff. And they're coming. They will come. But what did I say? I said Dinesh was challenging us in a way. And this is the way that I want you to think. We have to come out of the society that we live in. We have to think differently. But it's very difficult. It's very difficult to think differently in the society when people around you are gathering stuff all the time and talking about how much fun it is to do whatever they do on the Sabbath. Why isn't this place filled with people that know that God's word says you keep the Sabbath day? Because that doesn't appeal to my carnal nature. My carnal nature wants stuff too. My carnal nature wants pleasure and happiness and joy and fun and all those things. You know, God says those are all good, but you have to do it in a special way. You have to do it in a different way. You can't just conform to the world that we live in that is crushing us all the time. I want to go to Revelation 18. Getting tired of hearing myself talk. Revelation 18. Revelation 18, I want to start reading in verse 1. John, the writer, says, "After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority. And the earth was illuminated with his glory, and he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying," what did he say? "Babylon the great is fallen." You know, I read that a different way yesterday. You know how I read it a long time ago, or the day before yesterday, I read it like, "Babylon the Great has fallen down. Oh, that's good news." No, you know how I read it yesterday? Babylon the Great is a fallen entity. It's evil. It's bad. Babylon the Great is fallen. You don't want to have anything to do with it. That's the way I'm reading it now. Babylon the Great has fallen, and it is a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. For all the nations, and I think that includes us, have drunk the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become poor? No, no. They become rich. Rich through the abundance of her luxury. But thinking about Babylon the Great in my new way, Babylon the Great is a fallen entity. Is that what we want to become? Is that what we want to stay part of? I don't think so. Brethren, we can be overwhelmed with too much stuff, too much pleasure, too many blessings, too many options. What should you and I really want to do? Well, the third and final aspect, that question, I'm going to leave that unanswered right now. But the third and final aspect that D'Souza says or sees about America that makes her great in his eyes is what we just read about in Revelation 18. But let's read just a little bit more. Go down Revelation 18. Let's go to verse 7. In the measure that she, Babylon the Great, she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in that same measure, give her torment and sorrow, for she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, I'm a widow. I am no widow, and I will never see sorrow. Is that realistic? I mean, is that realistic? And I have to say no. I would like you now to turn to the book of James. Just go back a little bit. Just go back a few pages to the book of James, James 5, and I want to start reading in verse 1. How much time do I have, sir? Thank you, my friend. James 5, verse 1. Come now, you rich. Weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. I forgot to start my watch. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will be, I love this, will be a witness against you. If it corrupts, if it's physical, it's going to be a witness against you. And it will eat your flesh like fire. You have heaped up treasure in the last days. Indeed, the way... How could you read this? Indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields. And I look across the street and I see all these Mexican gardeners, you know, taking care of everybody's place. And I go out there and mow it with my lawnmower. But don't you see that? The wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud because you want to be richer, they cry out, and the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. That's Jesus Christ. You have lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in the day of slaughter. Dinesh says the third aspect that makes America great is capitalism. That word doesn't mean anything to me. I don't know what it means to you, but it doesn't mean much to me. I would say that the third thing that makes America great that people want is stuff. They want stuff. They don't think of capitalism versus communism. They think, I want your stuff. Most people in the world want stuff. If they're really poor, they want food. But now, because of smartphones available around the world that I've seen, people want stuff. Even stuff they never even heard of before. They don't even know what it is. But they see it, and now they want it. Let's go to Genesis 39. Genesis, first book of the Bible. 39, though, is getting toward the end of Genesis. I want to read starting in verse 1. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought Joseph from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Eternal, though, was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, even in captivity. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master, who was not stupid, his master saw that the Eternal was with Joseph and that the Eternal made all he did, Joseph did, to prosper in his hand. The Eternal made it work. The United States and England are Joseph. If you don't know that, now you know it. The United States and England are Joseph, descendants. They do not deserve what we have. We do not deserve what we have. But God did it for a reason. Remember Deuteronomy 9? Well, don't go back there. But let's go to Genesis 49, because it's a lot closer to Genesis 39. So just turn over to Genesis 49, and let's read three scriptures there. Genesis 49, verse 22, starting Genesis 49, verse 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. Now listen to this. Isn't this what is happening to the United States today? Or to England, in Tunisia, where they wiped out all those people, killed all those people that were on the beach, you know, having a good time on the beach? The archers have bitterly grieved him. You better believe it. You better believe that England is a part of Joseph. The people in Tunisia, they realize that. The archers have bitterly grieved him. They've shot at him and they hated him. But his bow remained in strength. Oh, I forgot to mention red, white, and blue flowers. Actually, red and white flowers with some blue ribbon. Whoever brought them, what a beautiful idea. I had my own idea. I brought purple eyeball flowers. I don't know what they're called, but I call them purple eyeball flowers because that's what they look like to me. V for victory. Okay. Okay, sorry, I just had to point that out. They are beautiful flowers, though, red, white, and... Okay, I'm going to wrap it up pretty quick here, Paul. I now want to go to the book of Jeremiah to conclude this. I want to go to the book of Jeremiah, because Jeremiah said quite a bit about prophecy. But let's start off in Jeremiah 2, verse 32. This is a metaphor, but listen to it. Can a virgin forget her ornaments? You know, when you're going to get married, most of the women here remember how on their wedding day, how they looked. This is an important thing. I remember I had a coat. I did. And I had a haircut. But I don't remember very much about it, but a woman thinks differently and they remember. Can a virgin forget her ornaments or a bride her attire? Yet my people have forgotten me days without number. We don't recall. Now, Jeremiah 13, verse 25. This is your lot, the portion of your measures from me, says the Eternal. Because you have forgotten me and trusted in falsehood, what's going to happen? Therefore, I will uncover your skirts over your face, that your shame may appear. It's very easy to understand. We are going to be embarrassed. We are going to be embarrassed. And there's a reason. It's because we've forgotten our God. Let's go a little bit further. Let's go to Jeremiah 18. It's just a little bit further down the road. Jeremiah 18, starting in verse 15. Because my people have forgotten me, they have burned incense to worthless idols, and they have caused themselves to stumble in their ways from their ancient paths, to walk in pathways and not on a highway, to make their land desolate and a perpetual hissing. Everyone who passes by it will be astonished and shake the head. I will scatter them as with an east wind before the enemy. I will show them the back and not the face in the day of their calamity. We're coming to that time. We're coming to that calamity. And what will God do? God will back away and say, you're going to get what you deserve. If you can handle it, do well. Because I'm going to back away. One more in Jeremiah. Jeremiah 50. Jeremiah 50, verse 4. Jeremiah 50, starting in verse 4. In those days, And in that time, says the Eternal, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together. And you go, well, this doesn't sound too bad. No, it's not. They and the children of Judah together, with continual weeping they shall come. Because when we have finally realized how much we've messed up, guess what? We're going to change. We will change. We won't change until it gets horribly bad. But after it's horribly bad, we will come, and the children of Judah together, with continual weeping they shall come and seek the Eternal their God. They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces toward it, saying, come, let us join together in a perpetual covenant that will not be forgotten. So there is good news in the end. But brethren, we should thank God, both Father and Son today. We need to acknowledge God and the blessings that God gives us. It's not because we deserve them, but rather because God, those two God beings, made a plan and they're working it out. We were to be a great shining light to every nation on earth. Even if most Americans do not see that now, we in God's church should see it. We should see and share that God made us to be a great blessing. At least in God's church, let's work to do our part. I want to read one last scripture, 2 Chronicles. Maybe you know where I'm going. But 2 Chronicles gives us all a sad hope. 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land.